Okay, so now we start the 10th parak of Bava Kamma, Mishnah Aleph. We set up to now that the din of a goslin is, if he steals something, he needs to return the object he stole to his victim. And in the event that that object is no longer around, meaning it had any, either a shashem, it goes by a new name now, it's a different kind of thing conceptually, or shinei ma'aseh, that's changed physically, it's had a transformation such that it can't simply revert back to its old state. It was pregnant, now it's not pregnant. It was wood, and now it's a baseball bat. So now the thing is transformed, and a shinui maisa or a shinui hashem will act as a kinyan, such that the goslin who stole the object need not return the actual object, because he can't fulfill the pasuk of that which asher gazal, that he stole. Instead, he pays back the damim, the value, the financial worth of the thing that he stole at the time that he stole it. We also said that when it comes to there's another way in which the ownership can transfer over, such that the object itself is no longer going to go back, but just as a value go back to the original victim, which is if there is both Yeush, I should say first Yeush, first the original owner who had his thing stolen from him, he gave up hope of ever finding it. People overheard him say, woe is to me for my loss that I never will get my thing back. So now he's at Yeush, he's given up hope of getting it back. At that point, a shinui reshus, a transfer of ownership, will be effective in making it such that the object now is disconnected from its owner and the owner will only get back the value. So for example, if I steal someone's car, then he has yeish, he says he'll never get it back from me, and then I go and sell the car to somebody else, he no longer can go to the person who purchased the car and say, that's my original car, give it back to me. All he can do is go back to me, the thief, and say, you owe me for the value of the car, because first he had yeush, he gave up hope of getting the car back, and then there was a shinui reshus, the car was transferred to a new owner, and that owner who purchased the car from the thief could keep the car as is. Now, our Mishnah here is going to talk about a case where we're going to have a question of whether children, the children of the thief, have to give back the object their father stole. So the answer is going to be very simply, if the object is still around, so then it has to go back to the victim, even if the father is no longer here. The father's dead. So the victim's alive. He had his car stolen from him. The car thief died, but his children are alive. The victim can go to the children and say, I want my car back, and they have to give it to him. That would be true even if the car weren't around anymore and the father were alive, and the car was stolen, and then the thief went and destroyed the car or sold it, whatever it is. Of course, you can go back to the thief and get the money returned, if even the car is gone, the money should be returned, and that would be true by the children also. If the children say, oh, the car that we had, we sold on, or whatever it is, so then they have to return it also. Even though the father's not around anymore, they still have to give back what the father owed. There's a special case here in our Mishnah where we'll show that if the object is no longer around, and it was, and the reason it's not around is because it was consumed, it was nechal, I mean it's been consumed, it's food, let's say, and it was eaten, or it was oil and it was burned. A, and B, the person who did the consuming of the stolen object was not the thief himself. Let's say it was the children. So then, in that case, the children need not return the object. So again, if the thief is the one who ate the donuts so that he stole, so then he has to pay back the value of the donuts. Similarly, if the donuts are left in the pantry, no one ate them, the thief could go to the children of the victim could go to the children of the thief and say, we want our donuts back, and the children will have to give back the donuts because they're around. But in the event, the question here is, if the in the event that the donuts that were stolen were eaten, they're no longer around, and they were eaten not by the thief, if he ate them, of course, they have to pay back, but if the children ate them, do they still need to give back the value of the donuts to the victim? And the interesting thing about this particular case is that there's no shinui reshus, because it entered into the possession of the thief, and it stayed there in his pantry, or into his children's mouths, and the children ate them, and the father's dead. So the Mishnah says, Hagozel, one who steals some donuts, let's say, u'machal es banav, and he feeds them to his children, or even if he didn't feed them to the children before he died, v'hiniach lefneihem, he just left it lying around for them, and then he died, and the children ate it out of the pantry. In either case, patur milishalem, since both conditions are met, meaning the stolen object is no longer around, the donuts have been consumed, and the person who consumed them is not the thief, it's the children, even though there was no shinui rishus, still the children are pater from having to pay back the victim for their donuts. He just, his loss, all he had claimed against was against the thief, the father, and the father's not around. So that would mean, just speaking it out, that if there wouldn't have been, if the person who ate it was the gods and the thief himself, then he would have to pay. Then he would have to pay. Similarly, if the bagels, the donuts were still around, and even the father was dead, they would have to return them. But in the case here where both conditions are met, A, it's been consumed, it's no longer here, and B, the person who consumed it was not the thief, then those children are exempt from having to pay back the victim. However, that even is, even if that's the case, the Mishnah says, "V'imhaya davar sheyesh bo achrayas." If there was a thing that had achrayas, meaning it was like karka, it was land, real estate, then chayavim neshalim. Then the children do need to pay. Now this Mishnah is misleading, because it's actually chesurim mechsur. The Gemara changes it around, because it sounds like what the Mishnah is talking about is if the thing that their father stole was something that had achrayas, and he stole someone's property, then it reverts back to the original owner. That's not what it's talking about. That would be true anyways, because the property would always be here. The case of the Mishnah is that the father stole donuts, which of course do not have achrayas; they're just donuts. But the father also bequeathed to his children something that has achrayas, meaning he also bequeathed real estate, which has a serves as a, you know, achrayas, collateralizes the debts of the father. So as soon as the father stole something, immediately an encumbrance, a lien, was placed on all his assets, all his real property, meaning the land that he owns, things that have achrayas, so that the victim has claim to those properties. So when the children inherit the farm and the donuts, even though they ate the donuts and they would be putter in terms of repaying the donuts because donuts are gone, and they, not their father, the thief, ate them, still, if the father also bequeathed a farm, so even as soon as, even in the lifetime of the father, the farm had a lien on it that said this $100 worth of donuts are, because of the theft, are owed to the victim. So when the children inherit that farm, they're inheriting the liability or the lien or the encumbrance on that property as well, and the property acts as a chrayas, as a surety, to ensure that the victim gets repaid, and therefore the victim, while he can't get back his donuts, could certainly say that your farm that you inherited has a lien to me to replace my donuts, and he can force them to whatever, go into foreclosure and take the money off the top and they sell it. Okay. Now, new din in the Mishnah. Focusing on the idea of eating stolen goods, we transition now to say that a person may not benefit from stolen goods. Now the case is going to be, first of all, whether it's certainly stolen. If it's not certainly stolen, you could have benefit from it. The particular case the Mishnah will give is talking about mochsin and gabayim. So we'll explain the difference like this. Mochsin usually translated as tax collectors, and gabayim are also collectors. So the case like this. If the malchus, the local authorities, the king, whoever, instructs his agents to collect a flat tax from everybody, that is binding. That's the source of the famous rabbinic idiom, dina de malchusa dina. The law of the land is the law of the land. The king's rule is the law. The king's law is the law. And therefore, they have to pay. Everyone pays equally, it's fair. And such a tax collector is not considered to be doing anything wrong. He's doing within the bounds of the law. However, a person could rise up in two different ways to act as a quote-unquote tax collector, but really with illegitimate authority, and therefore really he's a thief. The first way is that he is assigned by the king to collect taxes, but not under any fair way where everyone's giving the same amount. Rather, he's just told, you know, collect, and you can keep a percentage of what you collect, or collect, you know, a fixed amount for me, and whatever extra you collect is yours to keep. So in such a case, the king's gabai, his collector, will basically, you know, strong arm everybody, trying to squeeze as much as he can out of them, and arbitrarily taking different amounts from each person based on what he can. And in such a case, since that's iniquitous, it's not fair, it's not a fixed amount that's just, therefore that's considered to be that this gabai, this collector for the king, is really a thief. He's taking money that doesn't really have any legitimacy, and therefore he's taking people's money, and therefore it's a gazela. So the money he collects is all considered stolen goods, which one couldn't benefit from. The other way a person could rise up to be like a moches, a collector of taxes, quote unquote, is essentially to be like a mafia style, to point himself as a collector and say, if you want me to take, not harm you, so then you're going to pay me taxes. There's no legitimacy to that, it's just being a mafioso. So he sets up a toll bridge and says, you want to use this bridge, you have to pay me first. So then that's illegitimate, and whatever money he collects at the bridge is just stolen money, and therefore that money is also to get benefit from. So the Mishnah says, ein partin, now the word poret, really, but poret means to break up like pratim or details, right, or prutas or little small coins. The idea is that you can't take your large, big, say, gold coin and break it to lots of small silver or copper coins, which is really a service that you're benefiting from. Money was relatively hard to come by back then, the actual coinage, and it was like a service to provide to allow people to have change, like we saw back in Shkalim, for example. So, in Forte Lo Mateva Samochsen, a person may not use the war chest that this, you know, self-appointed, you know, quote-unquote tax collector has, to use that to exchange your money, because that money that's in the war chest, all that change is really stolen goods, and you can't get benefit from stolen goods. And similarly, lo mikis shel gabayin, nor can you go into the, you know, the wallet of the gabayin, that means the person is collecting on behalf of the king, but only without a specific amount that he's collecting for, just rather he's just arbitrarily collecting whatever he can get from each person. He's like a thief, so you can't use that, get the benefit of finding small coins from your Bitcoin based out of that guy's pocket, right out of his wallet, because it's all stolen goods. You can't even take those coins for the sake of tzedakah, because even tzedakah can't benefit from stolen goods. However, if the person, this gabai or moches, who's a bad guy, he has another business on the side, he also, and from that side business, he also has assets. So then, from his house, you can collect money for tzedakah, or to be mefaret, to break your big coins to little coins, from his house, or minashuk, from his business in the shuk, whatever it is, because we believe, we will be told in news and believe that the money that you're taking is money that came from legitimate sources. In other words, the bottom line is that if you know for certain it's stolen, you may not benefit from it, but if you're not sure and you can say, oh, this is from the not stolen goods, then a person would be allowed to benefit from it. Okay, now we mutter, and that's the din.